started the show with a brand new song from the Dr. Phil and Madela Kunene. We then played Imali. We played Vince the DJ as well. The song is called Hold Me Close. Group called Trust. If it's your first time joining the Tembo Sounds A Culture Show, welcome. It's a beautiful set. We mix music from different genres, get the party going, get the evenings jumping, making sure you're all relaxing and just enjoying the vibe, yeah? We're broadcasting from Pittsburgh to the rest of the world. Let's get back to it. 412-499-5000. We'll be right back.
to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, there is other news, of course, but we cannot avert our eyes from the genocide of the Palestinian people and the spreading effects of that murderous effort, including the silencing of criticism or concerns from U.S. citizens on U.S. soil about actions being carried out in our name. Chip Gibbons is policy director at Defending Rights and Dissent, a journalist, researcher, and a longtime activist. He'll join us to talk about the things that we aren't supposed to say and the lives we're told not to care about, and why we must never stop saying and caring. That's coming up this week on Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group Fair. The official death toll in Gaza is now roughly 43,000 people, very conservatively. As The Lancet and others remind, armed conflicts have indirect health implications beyond the direct harm from violence, including deaths from causes such as reproductive, communicable, and non-communicable diseases. In Palestine, the death toll is exacerbated by displacement, destroyed healthcare infrastructure, severe shortages of food, water, and shelter, the inability to flee to safe places, and the loss of funding to the UN Reliefs and Works Agency, one of very few humanitarian organizations working still in the region. A real accounting would also include not just those that we don't yet know are dead, but the maimed, the orphaned, the starved, the homeless. Democracy Now! Recently spoke with a doctor from Gaza who said that he wishes that Americans could see more of what it looks like when a child is shot in the head, when a child is flayed open by bombs. I think it would make us think a little bit more about what we do in the world. The New York Times has deemed such images too graphic to print. Too horrific, in other words, to run alongside reporting that suggests, implies, or outright states that those deaths are justified, they make sense, or minimally, they're not worth stopping eating your buttered toast about. As media critics, we look to Palestinians to represent Palestinian views, but it's crucial that we not see the present moment as something happening to other people somewhere else. The repression of simple anti-genocide calls, the censorship, the firings, the disinformation, the malforming of concepts like anti-Semitism, these are problems for all of us, about all of us, that will influence all of us forever. Defending Rights and Dissent, online at rightsanddissent.org, have started a project called the Gaza First Amendment Alert, which is going to come out every other Wednesday. Chip Gibbons is policy director at Defending Rights and Dissent. He's a journalist, researcher, and a longtime activist. He joins us now by phone. Welcome back to Counterspin, Chip Gibbons.
Thank you for having me back. I always say Counterspin is one of my favorite shows to do, and it is so vital with the sorry state of corporate media in this country that we have outlets like yours, because we would never get our message out. Occasionally we break through, and you know, BBC or The Guardian or whoever will call us up. But it's pretty bleak out there. Bleak both in terms of the death and destruction. Like everyone else, every day I see the horrible images and news coming out of Gaza, now Lebanon, and who knows, maybe Iran next. Pictures of people being burned alive while they're hooked to an IV. Stories about people being forced to flee or be bombed, then bombed while they flee. then corralled into a refugee center and then bombed some more. It's really, really horrific. And in the midst of this horror show, this genocide that is quickly spiraling into a regional war with obviously Israel as the aggressor and our government as the financer of it, we're witnessing this global tidal wave of repression against people who are saying, hey, wait a moment, let's not drop bombs on children, or journalists who show up, that looks like to drop a bomb on children, are being assassinated. Young people on college campuses who want to simply peacefully raise their voice are hit with police batons or have false charges against them. Journalists who report on the ground are killed by snipers and drones in their house. They get text messages telling them that their families will be killed. And every day our Congress votes to send more money to fuel this and sends these ridiculous letters to the IRS or the DOJ or the FBI or whomever else, telling them to crack down. And I do want to note that this is a global problem. On October the 17th, 2024, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Promotion and Protection of the Right to Freedom of Opinion and Expression, Irene Khan, presented to the UN General Assembly her new report on the impact of the conflict in Gaza on freedom of expression globally. And Defending Rights in Sense submitted testimony and is cited in it. So this is a global problem, and you wouldn't really know it from much of the corporate media. We started the Gaza First Amendment Alert as a project to sort of compile together in one place. I won't say all of the political repression in the U.S. because there's so much, it's impossible to include it all, but the vast majority of it. So attacks on press freedom, attacks on protest rights, attacks on civil society, an attack on transparency. We are documenting in one place in a biweekly newsletter. Every congressional office on the Hill received an invitation to subscribe to this letter. I think the only thing more dismal in this country than our corporate media is our Congress offices. I'm sorry, I'm laughing out of despair. And we sent it out to journalists to receive. But there's also been a really strong outpouring of support from people who work on these issues, from activists who have signed up to receive this newsletter and have talked about how valuable it is. And for the most part, it is focused on the repression in the U.S. The one exception is we are, because Israel uses U.S. weapons to do so, continuing to monitor Israel's killing, detention, maiming of Palestinian journalists and international journalists. And as you know, Judine, because your fair endorsed this project, this summer, Defending Rights in Dissent led a call of over 100 journalists, including four Pulitzer Prize winners, to call on Blinken to impose an arms embargo on Israel, because we cannot say we are for press freedom when we are giving Israel the guns it assassinates Palestinian journalists with. So the bulk of this newsletter focuses on domestic repression in the U.S., but we will, every biweekly period, as long as it happens, monitor the killing of journalists. I would love to have an issue that doesn't have it in there because no journalists were killed. But it, you know, in working on the first issue, I had to keep going back and updating the section on the killing of journalists again and again because Israel just keeps doing it. We have seen college students engaging in protests. One of the big things we intended to cover on the inaugural issue was what took place on the anniversary of the war. On October the 7th, many college students and others who wanted to show their sympathy for the Palestinian victims, their opposition to the war, want to hold protests or vigils. And there was a coordinated effort at the show and in the newsletter to suppress this. I get the Anti-Defamation League's Campus Crisis Alert newsletter, which is a great resource on political repression in the U.S. They don't intend it as such, but I use it as such. And police departments get that. I know for a fact, thanks to a FOIA request filed by Ian Carlos at NOR News, that the Chicago Police Department gets this newsletter. And like every day for a month, they encourage you to call colleges and send them letters and tell them, we know colleges love free expression. I'm not sure we know that anymore. But, you know, even protected expression can create a hostile environment. Even permitted protests can create a hostile environment. You know, abusing civil rights law, which is very important, abusing anti-Semitism to sort of claim they have to clamp down on political speech. And then telling them you need to put in place a policy for October 7 on how or if, the if was a big one, you permit protests. And then, of course, encouraging them to cooperate with law enforcement when campus policies are broken about expression. And many of these campuses have put in very draconian anti-speech policies, policies that would be unconstitutional in any other context, and if they are public schools, are unconstitutional. And I think one of the big victories the ADL got was they got the University of Maryland to try to prohibit an interfaith vigil of Students for Justice in Palestine and Jewish Voice for Peace, an interfaith vigil mourning the Palestinian victims of this genocide. And the school initially approved it. There was mass public pressure against it. And then the school put together a policy that stated that you could only have expressive events. This is a new phrase that we hear a lot, expressive events, expression policy.
Right, what?
Yes, events where people are being expressing themselves. And as some people have noted, some of these policies, when you start talking about expression, could be really rather broad.
Yeah.
But you couldn't have any expressive events that were not initiated by the school. And of course, that is unconstitutional, and Palestine Legal and Care took them to court, and the court allowed the vigil to take place. I saw pictures of it. I read news reports that there was 100 or so students having an interfaith vigil recognizing people who were slaughtered in a genocide. An interesting thing to me was that same day, there was a pro-Israel vigil as well to mark the Israeli victims, civilians killed on October the 7th. And there was a member of Congress speaking at it, Denny Hoyer. And we hear again and again about outside agitators on the college campuses, Hillary Clinton and I think Mike Johnson, basically in agreement that, you know, these kids wouldn't be upset about people being burnt to death in tents with U.S. weapons if it wasn't for outside agitators
right. Or
nefarious Iranian influence. Or one place I thought was Cuban influence. You really are bringing out all of the bad guys, right?
Castro from the grave.
Castro's ghost, Iran, Hezbollah, Hamas, Putin, China. Really, really, all of the evildoers, maybe, I don't know, are behind it, apparently. And yet, when I looked at the vigil, it was looked like. I mean, I didn't do an investigation of everyone's identity, but it looked like University of Maryland students. Whereas the counter vigil seemed to have a lot of pro-Israel advocates and a member of Congress at it. So I don't like the idea of outside agitators. You are allowed to invite prominent figures to your school to speak in solidarity with you, but like if there's outside agitators on the campus, who are they, right? Is it the college kids or is it the members of Congress coming to call for their repression and champion a genocide? I think I know the answer to that.
Right.
And then, you know, again, we've seen schools like Cornell sort of suspend international students and put them at risk of being deported. Right before we were about to go to print, not print, it's an email newsletter, but I'm using print in the figurative sense.
Yes.
That decision was reversed and the student had a victory. But another student at the University of South Florida had to return to Columbia because they were suspended for political speech.
Right.
So that's where we're at as a country. And unfortunately, I don't think we're going to have any shortage of news 2 weeks from now. In fact, we already have multiple stories that we are considering for the next issue, including the fact that you'll love this. The Heritage Foundation yesterday announced Project Esther, named after Queen Esther from the Bible, to allegedly combat anti-Semitism. But when you read the opening section of it, they're talking about a network of anti-Zionist, anti-American Hamas supporters. So they really mean as you know, I think most listeners know, they mean pro-Palestinian speech.
Right.
And we have members of Congress calling for, every week in Congress, they send a new letter to a new agency proposing some new bonkers action they should take against Students for Justice in Palestine. This week, they want them to register under FARA, the Foreign Agent Registration Act, which is, FARA is a very broad law. It's a law I've thought a lot about, but it makes zero sense in this context. CP are not agents of a foreign power, and if you're claiming that they're agents of Hamas, which is what this letter claims from some of Chuck Grassley and Ted Cruz, they've got a lot bigger problem than the FARA statute.
Yeah.
Someone was an unregistered agent of Hamas, which no one we're talking about is, they would not even be indicted under FARA or asked to register under FARA. They would be charged under the material support statute, under the Office of Foreign Asset Control sanctions, which earlier this week we saw a Palestinian prisoner support NGO. They were sanctioned under OFAC sanctions, Office of Foreign Asset Control, which has for decades been used to punish people for giving humanitarian aid in the occupied territories, to criminalize pro-Palestinian activism. It has not been used in many cases against actual terrorism, but against people who have views the government doesn't like, or giving, in these cases at least, Holy Land Foundation, Samuel Aryan, Muhammad Salah, a grocer from Illinois who was tortured by the Israelis when he was giving aid, and then became the first person ever sanctioned by the U.S. as a terrorist within the U.S. The U.S. citizen had all his assets frozen. You'll like this. Judith Miller participated in his interrogation and talked about it in one of her books.
Right.
Because the Clinton administration denied the Israeli government's claims that the Hamas was essentially based in Chicago. And she believed Israel. So in order to help them out, she went and met with this American citizen they were torturing. And she gave the interrogator questions. And then the interrogator asked him. And then she later testified at his trial that he wasn't tortured by the Israelis because, she was there and Judith Miller would have noticed the torture.
She understood. Well, listen, as I get older, I recognize that there is a value in simply collecting the harms. You think that everybody knows and everyone will remember, and it's just not true. There is a value in collecting the harms that are being done and in showing their coherence and their purposiveness. It's not random. It's targeted.
No.
And it's principled in a way, that we understand that term. And there is also tremendous value in lifting up the dissent, the resistance, so that we can never think later or right now that everyone is complicit, that no one is speaking out, even if not everyone feels really comfortably placed to do so. Propaganda is weakened when we have other avenues of information and communication. And that seems to be what your work and particularly this new project is about.
Yeah, and the flip side of the everyone is complicit argument is people use it later to evade accountability. How many times do you hear people say, that or this politician or journalist supported the Iraq War, but there was no one against the Iraq War. Hmm. I went to my first protest against the Iraq War in September 2005. I was a sophomore in high school.
Right.
There were hundreds of thousands of people there.
Exactly.
And we were all more right than the New York Times and MSNBC and Hillary Clinton and Dick Cheney was. Well, I think Dick Cheney knew what he was doing, but you know what I mean.
Yes. I was there too. Yeah.
I know you were. As I mentioned before, I first started reading Fair back during the Bush years.
So, yeah, I know. Take a breath.
Which we're back in.
But the point is that some folks might say, you're doing a newsletter and you're collecting, instances of censorship and firing and repression, and that's useful. But it's not just a collection, it's also a tool, it's also a way of speaking, yeah?
Yes, and we're definitely trying to get this newsletter to be a tool for journalists, to be a tool for congressional staff, to be a tool for other advocates. I mean, anyone can subscribe to it, and I think everyone can benefit from it. But we are doing extremely hard work behind the scenes to try to put it in front of people in the press, to try to put it in front of congressional offices so they can't say we didn't know, or they can use it as a resource.
Right.
Because I know they're getting the ADL stuff. I know they're getting the Heritage Foundation stuff. We know police departments get that sort of stuff. And, you know, the other side is extremely well organized. I'll never forget when I was in college after the 2009 massacre, bombing, war in Gaza. I mean, I went and met with my congressman's office, which is with a staffer, with some other pro-Palestine activists. And the very first thing he said is, "We hear from AIPAC all the time. We never hear from you guys."
Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, that's incredible. And that speaks to the need for organization and activism in this case. And at the same time, we know that when we get organized, when we speak out, elite media will not necessarily hear that voice or platform that voice, you know. And I'll just ask you a specific question. You know, FAIR and Counterspin, we've noted a lot that corporate media cover election issues as though elections were something that happened to politicians, right? You know, and not something that happens to all of the people that were affected. And with Gaza, with Palestine, with the genocide, the stakes can't be higher, you know. But how are you seeing Palestine covered as a campaign issue? And what would you do different there? What would you see differently there?
You know, I've been, I had to tune out most of the corporate media about a year ago when right. I was watching CNN and they ran this ad about Jake Tapper seeking troops to power. And he says, "I have the greatest job in the world. I have powerful people on and ask them questions." And then he came back from commercial break. He had a member of Congress on and he goes, "I don't remember a member of Congress." He goes, "Oh, Congressman so-and-so.
Yeah.
Students at Harvard just posted this on Instagram. Do you condemn it?" And wow. I was like, oh.
And that's news. Yeah.
No. Seeking truth to power mm-hmm. with the mayor of a member of Congress on, "We condemn college students right. at Harvard."
Right.
So, I mean, it is interesting because, I mean, the way the media covers elections in its own right, it's just its own problem. I mean, it's just constantly pushing the candidates to be more warmongering. I mean, you saw that maybe yeah. joyously did.
Yes. Yeah.
Saw that debate where the first question was, you know, "Will you support a preemptive strike on a war crime? You know, will you support a war of aggression?" Not a candidate answered it, I don't believe. I believe they both gave nonsensical answers because they had prepared opening remarks and they gave them. But, you know, again, there's a real chance. And I say this, I work for a nonpartisan organization, but that caveat. I mean, there's real questions about how Biden's blanket support for Israel will impact Harris's electability. At the end of the day, the murder of Palestinian children are not merely an electoral calculation for the Democratic Party.
Right.
And I've seen some people in liberal and left circles sort of talk about this. It's like, "Oh, no. Biden's making a bad electoral calculation," and had zero humanity towards the Palestinian people. I mean, the murder of the children should be stopped because we shouldn't be murdering children.
Yep.
It's not this sort of horse race. The horse race approach to genocide is just something I can't stomach.
When I talk to people, they almost offer a Hail Mary, like the students, you know, the children will save us all. But who's looking out for the students? You know, who's looking out for the kids that somehow are going to save us from this war nightmare that we're in? You know, there are laws, there are policies, there are things that we can do besides saying, "Well, gee, I hope those kids aren't too scared of going to jail." You know, I wish them well. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it is troubling. I mean, and if the students are all suspended and arrested and beaten up, they won't be there to save us. So, I mean, the student protesters need our solidarity, even if we don't agree with their choice of words always or choice of tactic. I mean, I was a college student once. I didn't always make the best decisions, but they're out there trying to stop a genocide in a society where 9/10 of our Congress, 9/10 of our local politicians, and like 9.9 of our media are all on board and fueling the flames, and they are getting beaten with batons, they're getting arrested, they're getting suspended, they're getting deported. They don't need our armchair extra analysis. They need our solidarity and our support, and they need us to get out on the streets too.
All right, then. We've been speaking with Chip Gibbons. He's policy director at Defending Rights and Dissent. They're online at rightsanddissent.org, and that's the place where you can get their Gaza First Amendment alert. Chip Gibbons, thank you so much for joining us once again on Counterspin.
Thank you for having me.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. If you'd like more information about FAIR, you can check out our website, fair.org. The website is also the place to learn about our newsletter Extra, to hear previous episodes of Counterspin, and to show support for the show if you are able and so inclined. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
이른 아침 가난한 여인이 굶어 죽은 자식의 시체를 안고 가난한 사람들의 동네를 울며 지나간다.
이른 아침 가난한 여인이 굶어 죽은 자식의 시체를 안고 가난한 사람들의 동네를 울며 지나간다. 부자들이 좋은 빵을 전부 사버린 걸 알게 된 사람들이 막대기와 갈 길을 들고 정문을 두드린다. 배고픈 사람들은 들판에 콩을 주워 다 먹어치우고 부자들의 곡물 창고를 습격했다. 일하고 걱정하고 노동하고 슬피 울며 마음 깊이 웃지 못하는 예의 바른 사람들이 뛰기 시작했다.
话题要跳跃的聪明，距离要暧昧而